This video assistance ride guide, which we saw on a corporate betting website last weekend, I think decision day, D-Day, may well be today or tomorrow for it. Andrew Nicol is the Federal CEO of the Australian Trainers Association. Joins me now. Morning, Andrew.
Morning, Sean. Thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. Did you know about this before last weekend?
No, we didn't. A little surprising. We heard about this on Friday, and obviously the last 5 days, press has been full of ride guide and the obvious concerns and considerations around the information that may be produced therefrom.
Well, one point being put forward by Jonathan Munns, the Thoroughbred Racehorse Owners Association chairman, he said the information basically is coming from trainers and owners. The jocks want to get paid for it.
Yeah, that's a fair call from Jonathan. I guess if we just take a step back, Sean, I guess in principle, from an ATA viewpoint, we're all about information flow to the general public. We think the manner in which we engage with them, we come a long way from just the form guide on a Friday night. So being progressive and trying to provide them with as much general information and as much engagement as we can is always a good thing to try and preserve our market share. I think, as Jonathan said, however, and the concern potentially with ride guide is that what type of information are we providing? Is it proprietary to the owner and trainer? Again, another issue, potentially could that information be used for advantage and or worse, for disadvantage? And I guess lastly, could it be considered misleading? Quite often we see a situation where a jockey, the first time he encounters a horse is on the Saturday because a rider's agent may have put the jockey on. He's seen the videos, but what information is he actually providing to the public that would be considered correct? Could it be misinterpreted? Could it be considered misleading? So I think there's a few issues there. I'm sure that the powers that be, Racing Victoria and Chris Simons and the Jockeys Association, no doubt they're talking about all of these issues and they're working their way through them. But yeah, it'll be an interesting 24 hours, let me say that.
I can see one problem with it. I imagine they'd have to pre-record these interviews with the jocks or the information. From the time it's pre-recorded until race time, a hell of a lot can change. Scratchings, track conditions, the whole lot. All of a sudden, the pattern of a race can alter if two front runners come out.
Well, absolutely. I guess this is what you're saying. And this is where I was coming back with this misleading information.
Yeah.
Or, Ladbrokes, as we read in the paper, and I can only take the paper on face value, they're investing $2.4 million into this particular venture. I can't imagine that they're going to pay $2.4 million for something that you can read in the form guide or you can listen to on the radio. So they're going to be looking for market-leading information. That would be my view, so or my expectation, I guess. So, yeah, we've probably missed a stage. I don't have an issue, or the ATA doesn't have an issue with an initiative taken by any of the participants, whether it be the Jockeys Association, the Owners Association, the trainers, etc., to progress and for the betterment of the industry. But I think in this circumstance, I believe that Chris Simons and the Jockeys Association have missed a trick here. They've missed a link in terms of engaging with owners, engaging with trainers, and understanding who, where that information is proprietary to, what is able to be put out there specifically. And that's not to mention, the other issue, or the other looming issue, which is, the rules of racing. Obviously, we know, how that relates to the tipping of winners with jockeys. So, and again, I'm not, I don't believe that Chris Simons and the Jockeys Association are naive enough not to have thought of these issues, but perhaps they just haven't put them in the right sequence,
Yeah.
Sean.
The other thing, I suppose, and it's interesting, the old owner often gets forgotten, and if you chase the money trail, it all goes back to him.
Well, absolutely, and I guess this comes back down to the proprietary information. There are obvious rules which require the trainer, where there is a significant change of tactics for him to promote that through to the stewards. But you're right. At the end of the day, he's incurring the lion's share of the cost in this industry. He underpins what the trainer does. The trainer has the largest, cost base. He employs people. He runs a stable. He clothes his stable riders. He feeds the horses. At the end of the day, at the end of the chain, is the jockey who sits on the animal and gets paid for it. Now, you're quite right. What right does a jockey have to provide that information beyond what the owner and the trainer, who have, if not the same, but perhaps a greater vested interest or a greater stake in this in the horse itself. So exactly what you're saying. It's that particular part has not been well thought through from the jockey's perspective.
If you're framing your market, what odds it'll go ahead?
It's a drifter at the moment, if I can say that. It's been a massive drifter. I think it's a... Look, at the moment, I would say the odds are against it, Sean. I think the Chris Simons and the jockeys certainly need to engage with the industry participants. Troa, on behalf of the owners, the ATA, on behalf of the trainers, we need to have some discussion about this. We need to understand the parameters, and that's to get it to a point where you can get to the table with Racing Victoria and Racing New South Wales, where they'll consider this in the context of the rules of racing, etc. So at the moment, it's certainly in the spelling paddock, and I would say that the odds are have drifted slightly at this point.
All right. Now, I'm going to talk to Des Gleeson in a moment. He's been appointed a director to consult on the whip rules. Mm-hmm. What question, as CEO of the ATA, would you like me to ask Des?
Well, I'd like to applaud, firstly, the Racing Australia for, at long last, forming the committee under Des's tutelage. We've got representatives from Racing New South Wales with Peter Volandis, Bob Pearson out of Perth, and Bernard Saundry out of Racing Victoria. I'd like to applaud them for at last trying to address something which has caused massive angst in the industry. You know, forgetting about the $330,000 of fines, the 1,200-odd reprimands, the 30-odd suspensions, which in themselves perhaps don't suggest that, we have to make this review. But I think the industry at large have got an undercurrent of discontent with the way the whip rules were introduced. Why they were introduced is to suggest that we are progressive and we are looking after horse welfare, so we completely understand that. But it's very clear that it's not working. So I would like to, the question to Des Gleeson is how quickly can we move to get some balance, some better balance into the industry. That's what I would be saying from a whip perspective.
All right, terrific. Well, we look forward with interest to Ride Guide and the future of that. That possibly may even be decided today, I gather.
Yeah, certainly there's been ongoing discussions. They started on Monday. There was further discussions yesterday. We were in consultation ourselves with Racing Victoria. They did have a communication with us about how our members were responding, and I have to say they felt left out of the tent. So we passed that on. We have had a conversation with the AJA about the matter. Whether it is quashed today by Racing Victoria, I'll find out at a meeting I'm attending in about 2 hours, Sean.
All right, terrific. Shoot us a text and we'll know what's happening.
All right, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Nicol there, the CEO of the Australian Trainers Association, the federal one. Des Gleeson is former chairman of stewards of the Victoria Racing Club. Racing Australia have announced that their director, Des, will chair a subcommittee of the board to consult on the whip rules. And he joins me now. Morning, Des. How are you?
Good morning, Sean. I'm well, thanks.
That's good. Well, Andrew Nicol just mentioned, you probably heard him saying what he'd like to have a look at to get some sort of uniformity into this and a bit of sensibility with the whip rule. How do you see it?
Yes, well, we've come a long way in the old days of unrestricted whip use throughout the races, Sean, and it's much better look now in racing in Australia. And back in 2009, there were significant changes to the whip rule where restrictions were put on the use of the whip prior to the 100 metres and not to be used in consecutive strides, and the whip arm not to be raised above the shoulder and all sorts of things like that. And then there were further changes late last year where the differentiation between forehand and backhand was removed, so forehand was considered to be the same as backhand. So there's been a lot of steps in the right direction, I believe. But Racing Australia did ask the chairman of stewards for a report on the success or otherwise of the current whip rules, and we did receive a report a month or so ago from the National Chairman of Stewards Group, and that's the reason basically for this subcommittee being formed, to analyse that report and to get feedback from all the participants, the jockeys, the trainers, the owners if they wish, and anyone else who's got a view on the use of the whip. And the subcommittee will sit down and consider all those submissions before putting a final report to Racing Australia in September.
All right. Now, with that, looking at the situation with the whip, do you anticipate many changes being made?
Oh, no, I don't think there'll be a lot of change, Sean. There has been certainly a lot of publicity about particularly young apprentices being penalised for using the whip once or twice more than the required five prior to the 100 metres. There's a significant amount of fines been issued for that breach of the rule. So that's something that needs to be looked at. Also, and I notice in a recent appeal in Victoria, Judge Bowman made reference to a rider that used the whip, I think it was three times more than the required amount prior to the 100 metres, but basically didn't use it from the 100 metres to the winning post. So that was considered to be in breach of the rules, although the rider may have only used it eight times in the race. So those things need to be looked at, and whether we can come up with a better alternative remains to be seen.
All right. When will we sort of know the outline of this or the final business with it, Des? Do you have an anticipated date?
Yes, well, we'll be putting a report to Racing Australia Board for their meeting in September, and hopefully they'll come out with an adopted rule in relation to the use of the whip following that meeting. But we're certainly consulting with a number of people. I've had meetings with the Jockeys Association, who are vitally interested in this aspect of it. And I know I've had some interest from just general racing public who have contacted me as well, who have concerns in relation to the use of the whip. So it'll be a lot of, you know, we have a lot of submissions that we need to digest and hopefully come up with an answer that's heading in the right direction.
All right. Well, we look forward to keeping in touch and finding out more, Des. Good to catch up.
Good, Sean. Good to be with you.
Great. Thanks a lot, Des Gleeson, joining us there, former Chief Steward. And we are looking forward to seeing what's going to happen with that, with the whip rule as it progresses. Sky Sports Radio, we've been looking forward to seeing our good mate, Sammy Clanton, back on the track. And we'll find out from Sammy how she's going. Morning, Sam.
Morning, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well.
Now, what's the latest with your injury? You had the shock and fall and had a bad tumble.
I actually went back to the doctor's yesterday and he's given me another month to make sure it's fully healed before I go back to work and start riding again. So hopefully in a month I can all get back to work and get back into race riding.
All right. Now, what was the extent of your injury, Sam? Because when you hit the ground, you really got pole driven into the dirt, didn't you?
Yeah, that's for sure. I fractured my collarbone on the inside, just below my chin. So that was pinned and plated. I done bruising to my knee on the outside of my left knee. And I done nerve damage to my lower back on the right side. So the back took a long time to get going again, but the knee and the back seem all nearly much 100% now, and it's just waiting for it all to be 110% so I can work.
All right. So what sort of exercise are you doing at the moment, and what do you do to do it?
At the moment, I've been just walking like 5Ks a day, roughly, just to try and maintain my weight. And I did put on a bit while I was in hospital with being unmobile. So just about walking around 5Ks a day, and then on the rainy days I go to the gym, so just trying to maintain my weight, so it's a lot easier when I come back. I just get my fitness and my muscle back on and I'll be ready to ride.
All right, terrific. Hopefully we'll see you back at this stage. I mean, are you riding, doing any work, or is it just purely exercise?
Just purely exercise. I'm not allowed to ride until I go back to work, so kind of getting a bit bored sitting home doing nothing.
Just sitting there doing nothing?
Time. Yeah, it's a long time. There's only so much TV you can watch, so I'm really keen to get back to work. It's just not happening as quick as possible.
All right. Well, Sammy, we wish you all the best. It'll be great to see you back in action again. And it's been a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. It's been just 2 months now. So, it'll be 3 months by the time I come back.
Well, be good to see you back in action. Good luck, Sam.
Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks a lot. Sammy Clanton joining us there. Another jock on the way back is Larry Cassidy, and he's joining us now. Morning, Larry. How are you?
Yes, pretty good, actually.
Well, that's good to hear, because we're looking back to early June last year. They said you'd be off for a little while, surgery on a couple of knees, both knees. But I tell you what, it's been a long stint.
Yeah, it sure has. It's been a bit of a process. I've had problem after problem with my knees, and had two tries at coming back, but ended up having more problems with them. And this was my third, and which I thought was going to be my final chance. And I've been riding work for about 4.5 weeks. I've ridden a couple of barrier trials, and all's going well. A little bit of pain, but all's going well so far.
Larry, often when we hear of joints going in jockeys, it's often hips, but with you, the knees. Any reason why?
Yeah, look, I think like 30 years of riding, I'd had my right knee operated on back in 2001 in Singapore, and then like obviously, you know, like horses, you know, they've got a bad leg, but they break down their good leg, and that's pretty much what happened to me. I went in my left knee as well.
Yeah, and that's literally the way it goes. You're saving one, the other wears.
Yeah, that's right. So I think just wear and tear, and then the last race day I rode at, I jumped off a horse and I twisted, and that did the final lot of damage.
Larry, there's probably a lot of people listening to you at the moment who are hobbling around, and they wouldn't start favouring a stall gift. What did you actually have done to help improve the knees?
Well, I had torn meniscus in both, so they obviously operated on both at once and just trimmed the tears away. The problem was when I come back, I end up with stress fractures in my femur and my left knee, and that was just from going for a walk, which they then sent me for a bone density scan, and I've got osteopenia, which is low bone density around my knees, which obviously contributed to it and the healing process. And then what also happened was part of the bone started to die, which was quite a concern and very serious at one stage. So luckily that healed itself. It took about 4 to 5 months for it to heal itself. And you know, then I had another go coming back, but ended up with stress fractures in my tibia.
Gee.
And yeah, then this is obviously the third go, and all going well so far.
Good. I saw a quote from you actually not long after this happened, and the quote was, "I broke 5 ribs in that fall I had with Priscilla Schmidt, that really bad fall in Brisbane a couple of years ago, but this is the worst injury I've had."
Yeah. I actually fractured my tibia in the other one, sort of my right knee in that fall as well. But you know, they couldn't do anything for it because it was sort of right in between the knee, so it was pretty much just rest up with the broken ribs and that. But certainly this is probably the most serious and worst injury I've had.
Rehabilitation-wise, Larry, coming back, what sort of exercise have you done, and how have you built up strength and just sort of reinforced these areas?
Yeah, because obviously I lost a lot of muscle in my legs because I had to pretty much sit on my backside and watch TV for pretty much seven, 8 months, and the other time I was on crutches. So obviously I had to rebuild my legs up, and you know, it was a slow process too, because if I did too much, chances are I was going to end up with stress fractures again. So it was walking in the swimming pool. I was going a couple times a week to water aerobics, where you put, you know, you're in a deep pool and you've got a flotation belt on, and you sort of look like a duck's legs underwater paddling. So that's a good way to build your strength up again. And then just slowly walking a couple of hundred metres, and then each day, just each week, just increasing it a little bit more and building up like that.
Mm. Now, I'm just looking at the date here, and this could be an absolute ripper piece of trivia. June 9, I think it was, 2015, was the last time you rode, wasn't it?
Yes.
Your last winner was?
Winks.
There's a good bit of trivia for someone, isn't it?
Yeah. So, well, I thought, well, if I don't get back, to have her as my last winner, and to have her as, like, she's won 10 straight, and I was the beginning of that 10 straight.
You did all the work. What do you mean? All the work.
Yeah. Well, no one knew how good she was until after I come home that night and said to my wife, I said, Jesus, she might be the best I've ever ridden.
You're kidding, and you've been on Sunline.
Yeah, well, just I'd never ridden a horse that had accelerated like that ever in my life.
It's truth.
it just, you know, I don't know if you recall that day she won the Sunshine Coast Guineas.
Yeah.
That was just phenomenal. And, you know, obviously, you know, what she's done from there on in, you know, it's history.
What did you expect when you went out to ride her that day? Did you? I mean, you wouldn't have expected that.
No, no, and I don't really think the connections were expecting that either. I sort of remember the race unfolding as we got to the 600. You know, I was three deep with cover, but they were peeling out six and seven deep in front of me to make their runs. And, you know, I was 16 lengths from the lead. And I knew she was first up, and I thought, well, I'm not going to panic, you know, because she was favourite. And I thought, well, I'll wait till we straighten, come to the outside, and if she runs home and can run third or fourth, you know, because I'm giving them too far a start, I didn't think I could win from that position. But at least, you know, I haven't taken off at the 600 and given her a gut buster. And when I come to the outside on the home straight and gave her a little bit of rein and a bit of kick in the guts, well, I think I was about 10, 12 lengths off them, and I knew I had them covered.
Fair dinkum, that far out.
It's absolutely amazing.
You know, it was something you said then all kids should listen to when you said, I wasn't going to panic.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I knew she was first up. And, like, her form was all right last prep. I think she'd been beaten in the Oaks when Maria rode her. But, obviously, they didn't think she was what she is now. And I didn't know what I had underneath me at the time. And I just thought, well, you know, don't panic. You know, the last thing you want to do is pull out the 600 and make a big long run when you're 15, 16 lengths from them and have an absolute gut buster and ruin them for the rest of the prep. I thought, well, just wait, come to the outside, give her a head, and if she runs home and runs a good third or fourth, well, you know, you just say, well, we got too far out of our ground. But that wasn't the case.
What did you say to her when you came back to the mounting yard on her? Because everyone, I imagine, would have been in shock.
I think everyone was, yeah. But it was, like, as much as I knew how incredible of a win it was, you sort of had to look at the strength of the field too.
Yeah.
And, you know, the strength of the field, you know, it wasn't that strong a race. There's been a couple of, I think, worthy cause. I think he was probably the best horse that's come out of the race. But, you know, horses just can't win like that. Well, they just don't win like that.
And I suppose you've got to be careful you don't get carried away and say, oh, this is a freak.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah, exactly. That's why I said to my wife, I said, geez, like, she could be the best horse I've ever ridden. I said, but the only thing is the field that she beat. I just don't know, you know. Yeah, probably I could have beaten them with my bad knees.
I tell you what, your prediction was spot on.
Yeah, and I remember saying to Huey when he rode her in the Oaks at the next start, the Queensland Oaks, you know, I said, you know, did he see the race? And obviously he did, and, you know, how incredible it was. And I said to him, I said, look, I said, I've never had a horse accelerate like that. I said, she might be something really special. And, you know, I sort of even sort of indicated to him, you know, she could be up, definitely up there with one of the best I've ever ridden. He sort of looked at me a little bit sideways.
Has there been anything come back from Huey for the advice?
Well, I remember when he won on a second up. I think James McDonald might have won on a first up. And then I sort of texted him, you know, told you she could be a champion. And he sort of, yeah. And then after she won the Cox Plate, I texted him, told you.
You're allowed to be a smart aleck then, weren't you?
Yeah.
It's fantastic to know you're on the comeback trail, Larry. Really good. How much longer before you anticipate riding again?
I was hoping the middle of August. I rode a couple of barrier trials on Tuesday and pulled up a little bit sore. So I'm sort of thinking end of August, early September. I've been off this long, another couple of weeks.
Just to make sure you're right.
That's right, yes.
You haven't had an offer from your brother to be his roadie while he's on the talking tour of Australia, have you?
No, I haven't, no.
You've probably heard all Pumper's stories before anyway.
Yeah. He wouldn't be able to tell the whole truth, though, would he?
Yeah. Well, you said that, I didn't. Mate, great to catch up this morning. Good luck, and it's nice to know you're on the comeback trail too. And we look forward to seeing El Cassidy not just on board, but in the winner's frame first up.
That would be great. Thank you very much.
Good on you, Larry. Larry Cassidy there, and good to see him back too. That's a good bit of tribute, isn't it? That his last ride, his last winning ride was Winx, which is absolutely amazing. And by gee, remember that day at the Sunshine Coast? Who would have thought on that day, I suppose? You look and think, well, she's just going to go on to be what she is and be absolutely sensational. She's been one incredible horse, and look forward to seeing her return as well. As I doubt the Chris Waller camp and the owners do, to see her back in action, see her going around again, be absolutely fantastic. Cox Plate with last year was amazing. Great to catch up with Ron Quinton. He joins me now. Morning, Ron.
Morning, Sean.
You've got Allegheny going around today at Gosford, drawn inside, a nice I Am Invincible filly, and your man S. Clipperton on board. What are your thoughts today on the wet?
Yeah, well, probably your guess is as good as mine, Sean, really. but some of the I Am Invincibles do handle it and others don't. But look, she's in good order. She's tough. She's rock hard fit. Just got beat last start, and she's, you know, drawn favourably, so small field, and you know, a lot of these fillies and mares, like, they're taking a little while to break their maiden status, so you know, let's hope she can do it today.
All right, now you must be very proud of Sam. He's got a contract to go to Hong Kong, and you must just sit, that must be satisfying for you, Ron.
Yeah, well, look, as I've always said recently, you know, he's come such a long way in such a short period of time. You know, be only 22 and, you know, won a couple of Group 1s and all that sort of thing here. And because he's got a great name and, you know, that's why they get these offers to go to these places, because of, you know, the way they've conducted themselves, and naturally you've got to have ability as well. But it'll be a great experience for him, and you know, a real eye opener too, I guess, for him too, because it's so different over there to here.
Yeah.
He's going to have to get his own rides and all that sort of thing, and you know, it's a whole different ball game, but it'll be a good experience, and you know, a big learning curve for him.
It'll be a different experience too, Ron, and that riding only 2 days a week over there compared to the pressures of riding multiple days here.
Yeah, well, we just never stop racing anymore. And like this week, we've had a bit of a shorten up with the rain. But yeah, no, it's busy. It's very busy here in Australia, riding nearly ride every day if you wanted to, I suppose.
Mm.
But over there, 2 days a week, I think that's one of the big attractions to a lot of the jockeys. And also probably the tax rate as well. That's another big thing that they look to, I think.
Ron, I suppose another aspect of the Hong Kong thing is dealing with owners. It's very important over there. They love to talk to the jockeys, don't they?
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about it. If you kick off well early and have a bit of luck, well, you're a lucky jockey. But if you don't start too good and take a while to ride a winner or two, well, they're quite superstitious. And we've got some great trainers there and the trainers, you know, world-class trainers there.
Why do you think it is that Hong Kong all of a sudden became the focus of world racing to a degree? That's where it's the gun place to ride or to train, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite amazing. Years ago, because, like, it was amateur there for quite some time, and then once it turned professional, well, it just kept growing and growing and got better and better. And a lot of the jockeys in the early days went there when they were probably a little bit older and sort of, you know, I don't say past their prime, but now it's the other way around, exactly the other way around. You know, and they used to have not very, very good horses, and now the Hong Kong can afford to buy so many nice horses, and they've got the money to do it, and actually they take quite a few of our nice horses probably away from Australia, so the racing's absolutely excellent there now, and very professional, very professionally run, and you know, we've got a host of Australian stewards there now, So it's, you know, it's very, very well run and very professionally run.
Now, Sam obviously still seeks guidance and advice from you, Ron. When you sit down and talk to him before he goes to Hong Kong, what sort of advice would you give him going to there? This is a totally different environment.
Oh, we have talked about it already in regard to how it tends to work over there. But, you know, I don't think he won't have any trouble adapting to the riding situation, because they ride very much similar to they do here. You know, the living part of it will be a big change, because it's, you know, all the jockeys and trainers live in the one sort of precinct. And that'll probably take a little bit of getting used to. But and the culture life over there, well, you know, he'll adapt to that. He's very sensible young fellow, so he won't have any trouble with that.
Now, you've got young Andrew Adkins here at the moment too?
Yes, Andrew's riding there. He's got he only ended up with one ride today, but the other one was scratched. But Andrew's poking along steadily and going well, and you know, he'll have no trouble outriding his claim.
Ron, do you have people ring you up these days and say, I've got a boy and I'd love him to be a jockey? You must get inundated, do you?
Well, yeah, sometimes I do. I've been very fortunate with apprentices that, you know, come, you know, from going way back. I've had some, you know, very successful ones. And, you know, my first apprentice was Mark Newnham, who'd done his last two years of his apprenticeship with me. And Mark's gone on and had a super job there at Gaze, and now he's training in his own right. And, you know, the likes of Huey Bowman, Mitch Newman, Bobby Alyssa, Brad Pengelly, and the recent ones, Sam and Andrew. You know, they're all been very, very, very successful, and I've been lucky because they've been really good boys, and they've towed the line and worked hard with me. And if they work hard with me, I work hard. If they work hard with me, well, I'll support them.
You know, I look back and think, gee, Theo Green must look down and just be so proud of the legacy he's left behind, the ongoing legacy.
Yeah, well, his name just keeps cropping up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You know, he was just a marvellous man, and, you know, just a great man. And, you know, like, if you happen to be lucky enough to be apprenticed to him, well, I think your battle was won, 75% of the battle was done before you even started, because he's such a great mentor and a great person.
Ron, what's the first bit of advice that Theo Green gave you that you pass on to the kids who come through your door?
I just think that I could ride pretty well when I come to the stables, but I was used to riding like Jim Carner style stuff, and he said, "Well, that's the wrong. You've got more bad habits, son, than I've ever seen anyone that looks like going to make a jockey, because you ride on the end of the reins." You know, put a pair of sulky reins on a horse, you'd be on the end of them, son, you know. But, no, just look, just basic good principle stuff, and had to be a great critic of your own rides all the time. And, you know, when we were very young, we'd ride a winner, and we'd come home and expect to get a pat on the back, and instead he'd say his young daughter Sharon would have won on that, you know. So, you know, he kept us very level. I remember the first ride I ever had for Tommy Smith as a 5-pound allowance boy. I won on it, and there was a big headline in the paper that on the Sunday morning that DJ wanted to buy my indentures. And he said to me, he said, "See that, son? See that article there? You don't be taking any notice of that stuff." He said, "That I conjured that up with TJ just to get publicity for you and to try and get you more rides." So I said, "Don't take any notice of that." So he kept us on a very level playing field.
He probably taught you more about being people as much as being jockeys.
No doubt about it. You know, taught us respect and integrity and all that type of thing. And yeah, you know, he was a great man.
Well, Ron, great to catch up today. Good luck with Allegheny today, and you'll be following Sam's progress, no doubt, in Hong Kong.
Yeah, well, we get so good coverage of that type, that racing over there now, so we can keep a pretty close eye on him.
Yeah, you certainly will, and you'll be very proud of him too. Ron, good luck today with Allegheny.
Thanks very much, Sean. All the best.
Thanks, Ron. Ron Quinton joining me there. An absolute pleasure to have a chat with him.